This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining this week is Justin Davis, Goop. Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And Tom Marks.
Goop.
And we've got a great show for this week. We're going to talk a little bit about Shadows Die Twice, the teaser that is teasing something Bloodborne-ish or maybe Tenchu-ish. It's a little hard to tell. We'll also talk about the top 25 PlayStation 1 games as rated by IGN in 2002.
Oh, boy.
Not updated since. But first, our little baby, our little bundle of joy, the Nintendo Switch, is turning 1 year old this Saturday. It's hard to believe they grow up so fast. Mm-hmm. Justin, you know.
Yeah.
You're a double dad.
Yeah.
This is kind of like your honorary third kid.
Yeah.
I know.
That's what we call the Switch in my house.
Is one any different than zero with humans?
Yes. Yeah, very different. They crawl. They walk.
Oh, walk. Okay. Well, that's terrifying.
Start saying some stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you think the Switch is walking?
It can walk if you carry it around.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can walk, take it out anywhere.
Once you get the Labo thing, it'll jiggle around. You made it.
Literally walk at that point.
If you guys haven't seen this, Tom used cardboard and made Labo prototypes. They're sitting on his desk right now. And one of them actually moved.
A very little bit. I think so. The thing I want to wait for is I think the problem was we didn't have the right like vibration thing that the game has. So I want to plug in the controllers when we actually get the cart. I want to plug in the controllers on my homemade one with the actual technology and see if it works.
Well, the Nintendo Switch turns one this Saturday, March 3rd.
We're going to get a cake.
There's going to be a cake. There will be cake.
There will be cake.
Hopefully the cake is not a lie. Everyone is excited. Dave Brown in Gloucester, England wrote in.
Gloucester.
He says, "What's up, Pog cameos? The Nintendo Switch turns 1 year old this week, and I, for one, cannot think of another console with a better launch year. Zelda, Mario Kart, Splatoon 2, Odyssey, the Nindies, the list goes on and on. Do you think Nintendo is able to keep up the stellar launch schedule into the second year? What would you like to see from them, and what do you expect to see from them?"
No, and I have no idea.
Dave's not the only one. Rachel from Trinidad and Tobago writes us again saying, "Looking back at the Switch's launch year, Nintendo released two of the greatest games ever made, broke sales records across the globe, restored faith in their company, and did all of that while innovating again with gaming hardware. Seems like year one was a whirlwind, and now that we're reaching a point of calm, I've been hearing a lot of skeptical chatter regarding the Switch in 2018. Can the Switch's momentum be maintained this year, or do you think that the 2018 lineup of new games and ports won't be enough to guarantee an equally or increasingly successful second year? P.S. Damon, Trinidad and Tobago is the full name of my country. It's a small twin island nation in the Caribbean."
So I wanted to...
I know that.
So the islands are exactly the same?
This is twin, not identical twin.
We're just going to start another misnomer for the next week.
I was just going to say, before we answer these questions, we know that Trinidad and Tobago is one country. When we were saying you had to pick one, Rachel, that was a joke.
Yep.
Yeah. We're just joshing.
And it sounds like a lovely country that I very much like to go to.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year.
Soccer tradition.
Ooh. So the Nintendo Switch, year one, was it the best launch year ever for a console?
It's up there.
Definitely.
It was a pretty great launch year. Like I remember back when it was 6 months into the Switch, I was on NBC and we were talking about how was the Switch's year? And like I was kind of harsh on its lineup back then, but I think I've come around. Like the fact that Nintendo made Zelda and Mario in the same year that they also launched a new console to rave reviews is like mind-boggling.
And that their quality was so high.
Yeah.
Both of the best entries in both series in years, I think.
I mean, they said that in the email, right? Like, these are two of the best games that I think I've, like, maybe ever played, and the same year, the same company on a brand new system is really impressive.
It's hard. The year one stuff, the farther away you get from it, the harder and harder it is to, just sort of parse out. Like, you forget, like, your memory gets fuzzy, right? Like, I love my PS4. It's my console of choice this generation. But its first year, it was like Killzone Shadowfall. Like, I don't really know. Like, it usually takes consoles a little while to find their legs. And then you're able to forgive that slow early period as it finally gets to the point where, you know, you kind of want it to be or need it to be.
And when you go back to, like, NES... people didn't play the NES in the first year. They played it at the end of the first year. And then that second year where it actually mattered, it did have Mario and Zelda.
There's all the weird trivia of like the Genesis like didn't launch with Sonic.
And I mean 86 to the end of 87. The
Genesis went like 2 years or more without Sonic.
Yeah. 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 A boxing game that everybody loved.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's also crazy to think back to when the Switch was first launching, when it was first coming out. And like the big criticism of the Switch at launch was like, doesn't have any games. Like, there's not really much to do with this. Like, when are the games going to come out for the Switch? And then it was like a few months in, everyone was like, all right, there's some good stuff. And then like a few months later, it was like, oh my God, please stop releasing games for the Switch. There's like 20 coming out
every week. There's like 20 indie games.
You know what fills in the holes is that there's those indie games that we all gave really high scores to that are still smaller, like Stardew Valley. Or what's the horror game that came out?
Outlast
today. Just
surprise release.
I mean, it's like those kind of things are like filling in these like crazy gaps to make it that year just feel incredible.
The GameCube launched with Smash and Pikmin, which were incredible. You know,
what about Luigi's Mansion?
And Luigi's Mansion.
And it didn't launch with either of those. That was
they came year one, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I was gonna say
Pikmin. And then Monkey Ball. So like for me, like the GameCube's up there is a very, very strong launch lineup.
Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2.
Yeah. So good. N64 was way thinner on content, but it had Mario Kart 64 and Super Mario 64. And I think Shadows of the Empire was like maybe year one.
Yeah, year one.
So, that's also pretty
Cruising
strong.
USA.
Cruising USA.
That mattered.
It did back then.
Yeah, they've had like these periodic temple releases starting with Zelda. They had Splatoon 2 and ARMS.
Clearly very deliberate on their
part. Mario Kart, Mario Plus Rabbids, Mario Odyssey. But then in between all that, like you're saying, like every week there was at least one real gem, I think, of an indie game release from you said Stardew Valley, Night in the Woods, SteamWorld Dig 2.
The caps of Mario and Zelda are just incredible to me.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Have they ever done both in 1 year, in year one before?
I think so.
But to the point of where do they go from here, I mean, that's the downside, right? Like, we got awesome Mario and Zelda games in 1 year, but then it's kind of like, oh, like where? But they're doing Pokemon.
Metroid Prime 4. I don't know if that's supposed to be this year.
Oh goodness gracious!
Fire Emblem is still supposed to be happening this year.
This strongly rumored. I actually don't know where those rumors come from. Are those based off any kind of reality, or are people just assuming?
No, I mean those are just the franchises that we haven't heard anything about yet.
Yeah, we know Dark Souls is coming.
That's true. Forgot about that.
This spring, I believe, right?
Yeah. And that'll be what'll make it or break it is like now that third parties, you know, it's hard to make games for the Switch, right? Because it's so underpowered compared to, you know, it's hard for them to port just like Red Dead Redemption 2 to the Switch or whatever the case may be. But if more developers find a way to get their third party software on that platform, then that's when we'll really see like if Nintendo doesn't have to shoulder it all themselves.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein 2 is supposed to come this year.
Wolf. Yeah, so it's like Bethesda's taking it really seriously. Really
yeah, they are.
On.
Yeah,
but that's always been kind of like one of the pitfalls of Nintendo consoles, right? Is like I love Nintendo. I absolutely love Nintendo, and I've had basically every console they've ever made. But like, there's always a certain point, kind of late in the cycle of that console's life, where they're like, start to like run out of steam in a big way, I feel like. I mean, the thing that always indicated it to me was when I would like go to Blockbuster to rent games and like the Nintendo section would be like one rack and then they'd have like four racks for Xbox and four racks for PlayStation.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't feel like that's going to happen as much, mainly because of all the incredible indies that are coming out for Switch. Yeah. But like that is a real concern because it is a thing that happens a lot with Nintendo systems.
I mean, we like Splatoon is not my thing. I don't dislike it. It's just not my personal taste. Sure. But you got to give them so much credit for just not like they get accused of being the company of just Mario and Zelda, but they haven't been for like decades, right? Like Animal Crossing is huge. Pokemon is going to be gigantic on that platform. Yeah. And, you know, Splatoon, although it's not for me, has been, you know, that really shored up their summer. Like that ended up being a really great seller. And so, like, we'll get a new Mario Kart eventually, you know? Like, they have more franchises than anyone, I think. Like, they'll just cycle through. Like, maybe we'll get another Mario or Zelda. Probably Mario, if I were to guess, before the end of the Switch's life cycle.
I think it's cool that 1 year in, we all just had a conversation about the Switch, and it was only about the games. And that we could have that conversation and how positive it was, because the conversation when the Switch came out was all about the hardware and if people would care.
It's crazy that
and
like,
people so care. And I don't have a bunch of things that I'm like, wow, a year in, I wish that Switch would be different. Yeah. Like it has a good battery and it feels fine. It's heavy. I want like certain things change, but I still play it all the time. You know?
And that's the thing to me, because the Switch before launch was such a big question mark, whether that like the hardware was gonna be worth it or pan out or any of those questions. And like kind of it came out and the answer was just like, yep. It's good. Yeah. It's great. It works. Yeah. I like taking it on the go. It works on the TV. Sure. Like, and people like,
I look forward
on.
To playing trips so much more now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
It's like, what am I going to play? What am I going to play? And then I just like put on my hair.
I'll like pick something and like save it for the plane. So I get all excited about getting on the plane.
Game.
Yeah.
It is interesting that I do like the hardware a lot, but the software I think is actually a really big step back. I really like the personality of the Wii U and the Wii.
It's like the interface, you mean?
And
like
the 3DS. And Nintendo really leaned into this sort
you're talking about the operating system, right?
Yeah, like, or just whereas the Switch could not possibly be more bare bones. And I kind of go back and forth on, like, was that a deliberate pullback on their part, or was it just look like we got to get this console out the door? Like,
yeah, focus on the games, not on the.
It's 1 year later, and online's not here.
Yeah.
Like any other company on Earth.
That is a disappointment.
Absolutely.
And it kind of worked in their favor.
Yeah.
Think so?
They put out these big single player games.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. I appreciate that. But I would also, you know.
I mean, it's something to criticize, but it's not something that stopped everybody from getting Switches.
Yeah.
Like that strategy worked for them.
I miss like the shop music and just the weird, just the quirkiness is absent.
I mean, it doesn't even have an online browser yet. Mm-hmm. Like, is a very kind of simple, glaring absence in that
Netflix.
Same way. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't have Netflix. They have Hulu. But then, like, they got Payday 2 recently, but there's no voice chat in that game, which hinders your ability to
coordinate with the team as Payday requires.
Yeah, there's definitely still things like that. I mean, there's also the thing about like the dock is still just kind of bad and clunky, and third-party docks have solved a lot of the problems that Nintendo created.
Did you get a third-party?
I haven't gotten one yet, but I've been thinking about it a lot. The truth is I played my Switch more on the train than I do docked. But I know Philip has a really nice one that he has at his desk that's like much simpler to use.
The idea is that it doesn't scratch and then it's easy just to
I think that Nintendo wanted to have a nice silhouette that looked like a console to sell, and that's why they did this upright dock that covers it on both sides. Mm. And the truth is they don't like it doesn't need to be this big thing. It could be a much more elegant thing. And
it would be so much happier to just plug an HDMI cable directly into the Switch and just let it sit.
Remember how funny we thought it was, too, that they deliberately covered the screen? They're like, it's not two screens, ever.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, somebody, some, like, cool indie developer may want to use that spare screen, but they're like, no.
Yep.
We're covering it.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. Do you ever use a touchscreen on the Switch?
Yeah, for shopping.
Interesting.
Yeah, for shopping and, like, typing in, like, your password and stuff.
I haven't played my Switch since Mario. I keep thinking, so I own Darkest Dungeon on PC and on iPad, and I'm thinking, I keep, in the back of my head, if I were to go back to my Switch, that's the game that I might just pick up and run through again.
The game is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I played it again on Switch.
So my Switch is actually collecting dust right now, but I don't regret, I mean, I was still very happy with it for many, many months. So.
I'm playing Owlboy and Stardew Valley and Mario Balloons. So those are the three things I've been playing.
Oh yeah, Mario Balloons is out.
It's all like all those things like I've been kind of juggling and playing. And it's like it's incredible to say that, and like those aren't all huge releases that are out this week, but it's keeping me from playing the things that are out this week.
I kind of forgot about Mario Balloons.
What's out this week?
Well, Outlast is out this week.
Yeah. But you're probably not going to play that though.
No.
I'm very impressed with the Switch's first year. I'm very excited for year two. I hope they can maintain that momentum. I know that we're still waiting on some big announcements, but every week there will be another 20 or so smaller games released, and there's, like I said, there's usually at least one gem in there.
You keep hearing these news stories about, like, Super Meat Boy sold as many on the Switch as it did on Xbox in a year, and, like, every indie developer, and at some point that's going to end, right? Like, there's going to be so many indie games on the platform, or people are going to tire of it, but for now, if you're an indie man, like, get your game on Switch. Like, cash in while they're, you know, ride the wave.
And, like, I know we need to close this conversation, but, like, if they have an amazing virtual console setup, where we can get so many games, which they say they're not. I'm already telling you guys, they said they're not doing that.
Yeah.
They're going to do a subscription service, but you know, that's another thing that could make year two really exciting, should the plans change, which they say they won't.
You don't think they'll do the virtual console, just like just do the same thing. Like, that was so, to me, it was so valuable to have these obscure, like, TurboGrafx-16 games and Sega Master System games available legally and simply, you know.
Bomberman 96 was my most played Wii game, probably.
Which one is 96?
That was the TurboGrafx one.
94.
94?
Right? Yeah.
Oh, excuse me.
Right.
But it's 5-player. That's all. That's the main thing I remember about it.
92? It's not 96.
No, well, both.
I know
of those,
you're talking about that. It's really cool multiplayer.
Both of those years would be pretty late for the TurboGrafx-16.
Yeah. But I always get confused. Donkey Kong 94.
Yeah. Maybe
I
that's
think
what
it's Bomberman 92.
I think you're right.
It sounds a little bit more.
There's no way to know.
Nobody knows.
Now, how could anyone know?
Moving on. Remember, during the Game Awards in December, there was a teaser for something. The teaser itself, I think, is called Shadows Die Twice. It was a brief graphic, and then that text came up on the screen. So people call it the Shadows Die Twice teaser. And it's from Software, so people are thinking, maybe it's Bloodborne 2, another Bloodborne. But some other people have their own theory about what it could be, and it actually sounds a little bit more interesting to me. This is Mark Anchetta. He says, I've been watching your stream for a couple years now. Very entertaining, I must say. Get your yucks in, because I'm emailing you from an AOL email address.
Oh, yeah. That's why Damon picked it.
That's why. That's how I pick what emails we're going to read out. I've come across something interesting about Shadows Die Twice. I've been snooping around the interwebs and read on a few posts that the trailer wasn't exactly teasing Bloodborne 2. Instead, the trailer was teasing a new Tenchu game. A few things, a few reasons why that may be. Number one, the writing in the background is a form of Japanese kanji written in cursive. Mm-hmm. Number two, there is a hidden kunai in the middle of that torture contraption rope thingy. Anybody know what a kunai is? Throwing star that ninjas use.
Cool. Yeah.
And number three, the title itself is a reference to a cutscene in Tenchu 3.
It's not a shuriken?
No, different thing. Nintendo 3, Wrath of Heaven, where Rikimaru talks about sending out his shadow and then later refers to himself as another shadow.
That's a deep cut.
Coincidence?
Yes.
Also, next year will be the 10th anniversary of Tenchu Shadow Assassins for the PSP.
That's pretty good.
I'm excited for a new Bloodborne game, but I'm even more psyched to have a new Tenchu game come out for current consoles, hopefully.
And you've played Tenchus?
Yeah. Like a back.
Explain.
Back in the day, it's a ninja stealth, like a top-down ninja stealth game. I'm sure they would change it. Probably wouldn't be a top-down game today.
Like Metal Gear style top-down.
I mean,
like that style. I know it wasn't always top-down.
A little bit more.
Cameras up high.
I think of
one Metal Gear Solid one.
Metal Gear Solid 1. Actually, yeah, it's probably a bit more like.
You know what
that.
I mean? Where it was really pulled out. Is that what it's influenced by?
Didn't they make? Mm. I'm only on my phone because I'm trying to look up FromSoft. They made a Shadow, like a proto Dark Souls game called Shadow Tower.
There was another game that had Shadow in the title. It's all.
It was basically like Dark Souls, but you had a gun.
And then there's 3D Dot Game Heroes, which I hope it is.
You think Shadows Die Twice is teasing 3D Dot Game Heroes 2?
Shadow Tower, yeah. They released... That's what Chloe Rad is our resident Dark Souls mega fan, and she keeps going crazy because everyone's speculating on what game this is, and people for no reason think it's Bloodborne. It's like, they made a game called Shadow Tower, and like...
Yeah.
Well, it's not for no reason. It's because everyone really wants it to be Bloodborne.
And why would you make a different game?
Yeah.
It's probably so it can be multi-platform.
Tenchu is a good bet, but Shadow Tower is a possibility.
That was a convincing argument. I'm sold.
I would be stoked if it were a new Tenchu game, although I would be a little surprised because Tenchu is not a very well-known name these days.
But FromSoft can do what they want now.
That's true. They've got that Bloodborne money.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I would be stoked for a new Tenchu game. But he also has a question. Which game from the past would you love to be remade or reimagined for today's consoles?
Oh, boy.
That's pretty open-ended. But it's obviously for all of us, all four of us here, Hudson's Adventure Island 2.
Sam speaks for us, yeah. But why 2 specifically?
Because you can ride dinosaurs in it.
And you can't in the first one?
No. That was in the first one, you just ride a skateboard at best. And that's hard. And you can collect a bee. You can throw a rock, but like, or an axe. But two, you hop on all manner of dinosaurs, and they have big, cute eyes.
I don't have the two franchises that I desperately want to come back. Maybe I just have Nintendo on the mind. Are F-Zero and Advance Wars.
Yeah.
I don't particularly care for anyone to be, you know, remade or re-released, but just please come back from the dead in some form.
So that would be 2 and 3 after Adventure Island 2.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
We've got a Wargroove coming. That's the
Still coming.
That's still coming.
It's not quite
Chucklefish.
The same.
It's kind of Advance Wars like, but fantasy.
And there's an Advance Wars like called something Steel Iron something.
Yeah, there's two of them.
Oh, there's two now.
No, one. There's Wargroove. There's 2 Advance Wars clones coming to Switch.
Okay.
Wargroove and then that one.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought there was one that came out and then it was just okay. Is that not true?
Yeah, there was. I'm just blanking on the name right now. And it was a spiritual successor. It was kickstarted. It was from I think the original creators. And I mean,
I'm an Advance Wars purist, and so I get like my eye twitches a little bit when someone's like, "Oh, there's these other turn-based strategy games coming," but I'm like, for me, I'm like, it's not the same. Like, I ran an Advance Wars fan site and all that stuff. Like, I want the real thing.
Do you want Monkey Ball back?
Yeah, I want Monkey Ball back too.
No motion controls though.
No motion controls and no jump button. Oh, I'm gonna flip this table over. What were they thinking?
What was the name of the minigame mode where you like you roll down the big slide and then
Monkey
you
target.
Like, you glide?
Yeah.
Oh, that was so good.
Dude, let's hook up. Do we have a GameCube hooked up?
No.
We can.
I don't have any
meetings. We have so
this
many
afternoon.
Weeds.
Let's play Monkey Target.
Tom, what game you want either remade or reimagined?
I've got a really great bad one. I want the Goof Troop game from Super Nintendo.
Whoa.
Where they're on the island, the co-op one.
Full disclosure, I almost picked that as this week's 20 questions game.
Oh,
I almost
Dang. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want that game modern. Like, I think that
I never played that game.
It's great.
Shinji Mikami made it.
Huh?
Shinji Mikami made
it. Yeah, just like out of nowhere.
The creator of Resident Evil.
Yeah, it's very strange, but it's a great game.
It's it's not like DuckTales or Rescue Rangers. It's more it's top down,
it's like very puzzly. There's very
for Super Nintendo?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm misremembering that, but I believe it was a Super Nintendo game.
No, there is a Goof Trooper on Super Nintendo, but I don't picture it as a top-down game. But
it's
kind of
like,
I was surprised too.
It was that top-down where it's like a little bit tilted. It's not like straight top-down. Okay. And yeah, it was this really cool thing where you had to like pick up items and like certain items could only interact with certain things. So you had to like, the map was like almost Metroidvania-y, even though it's way overused now. But like you would have to explore it and like get the right item to go through the right puzzle section.
Like Fester's Quest.
And as single player.
Which is what I would like to have remastered, by the way.
The Addams Family, Fester's Quest.
And as a single player, you control both of them and you swap, and then you could play two player where you're both going, and that game was great. Game was great. I think it would be right at home nowadays amongst other indies or even major. And also, like, Disney has done a lot of cool stuff with, like, redesigning Goofy and, like, their characters in recent years and, like, those kind of core characters. So I think there's a, like, way to do that same IP, like, in a very interesting, cool new art style.
But nobody's making new games with classic Disney characters right now, are they? That's not a thing.
Kingdom Hearts?
Well, there's Kingdom Hearts, yeah. But not like a straight, like,
no,
Disney
I don't,
game.
I don't
there's
think
no,
so.
Like, cool Disney platformers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I legit like is a Goonies 2D Metroidvania style game.
Ah, okay. Like Goonies 2 on NES?
Mm-hmm.
Or Goonies the arcade game?
But good.
Yeah, but good. With mermaids?
Mermaids are perfectly acceptable.
Mine would be, I think fighting games are kind of having a renaissance right now. So it's time to bring back Rival Schools from Capcom.
Mm.
The high school fighting game where every fighter is a high school cliche. You got the
geek and the jock.
Yeah, the photographer, the swimmer, baseball player. It's so good.
How can the geek hang with any of them? Doesn't the jock just
beat their asses?
Okay, fair enough.
So we know it's not Goof Troop today.
Yeah.
So there you go.
One down.
Freebie. One down.
Yeah. Gave you a freebie there.
Jordan, question for that.
That was really good.
Let's share what we've been playing. Sam, you're saying you're playing Mario Odyssey Balloons, Owlboy, and
Stardew.
And still Stardew
Valley. Mostly Owlboy, which I'm not as far as you are.
Where are you in Stardew?
Year 3, month 2.
Oh, boy. You're almost
there. I got married. I married the mean girl.
Oh, what? Why?
It was an interesting story.
Okay.
She ended up liking photography.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
It's artsy.
Yeah, she's still mean to people.
I asked her to dance at the summer, the very first thing, and she just said, ew, and I was like, I'm done with you.
Lots of her dialogue.
I'm never going
to talk to you again. Lots of her dialogue is ew. But we got close and, you know, started a farm.
I actually didn't play any Owlboy this week. I played through more of Wolfenstein 2 last night. Another like crazy set piece that I don't want to share or don't want to spoil for people who haven't played the game yet. But like that game is just like crazy thing after crazy thing. They packed so much into that game. It's really cool.
It almost has like a deceptively slow start, even though that's on like an amazing Nazi submarine airship or whatever.
It's that,
it feels weird. and then it just gets better.
It's a little bit more conventional.
Like that would have been the final level of another game.
Yeah.
But no.
That's actually a really good way to put it. Like, it opens on what would have been a previous game's climax.
But then I also started playing Into the Breach this week, which Tom was saying he's been playing. And that game is really fun. It's really cool. That's, like, the new one from the FTL guys, which the developer's name is?
Subset Games.
Subset Games.
It's two dudes, and then they freelance some stuff out, but it's mainly made by two guys. And, yeah, it's a blast. I've played probably, like, 30 hours now of it. Yeah. And really not since it came out yesterday, but...
Can you play as the bugs?
No.
No deal.
I was just thinking about this morning that it would be cool if they had like some sort of mode in it that was like a flipped mode.
Yeah.
Try to destroy cities. But
that'd be fun. Yeah, so it's got pixel art style, kind of like FTL. And it's roguelite, but it's turn-based strategy. So it's a roguelite turn-based strategy game where you are like giant mech, kind of like Pacific Rim. You're like defending the city from attacking kaiju. But it's on like it's kind of like a small playing field.
Eight by eight.
So, but within that small space, they introduce a lot of variables, and there's a lot of different things to consider. And before you make your move, you kind of have to plan out how things are going to go as best you can, and then hope for the best.
And then what carries over between rounds? The roguelikeness.
So maybe Tom can explain this better, but the lose condition of the whole of your whole like. Run is when the cities lose all their health. And so you have to prevent the kaiju from attacking the buildings and causing damage. If they deteriorate the city's health completely, then your remaining soldiers will go back in time, start over again, but retain their upgrades. But if you have no more soldiers left and it's just AI pilots operating your mechs, when the cities are destroyed, then your whole campaign is wiped and you start over from zero. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Can you reset the system before that happens?
No, so it's when you die and you go back in time, you get to save one of your pilots, like you were saying,
save one.
Yeah, and that comes with their upgrades.
But you may not have any left.
Exactly, and you might not have any left, but... The kind of outside of the game progression is you unlock new mechs and you unlock new like starting pilots.
Okay, so you're never going to lose all of that.
No, you always have three mechs and you go into a run and it's kind of just like a thematic thing with the time travel that I really like, where it's like in a run of FTL, when you die, you just lose and you start over and you've unlocked some other things that you can now start fresh with.
There's no story tying that reset together.
No, there's no story tying the reset together in FTL. It's just like you begin a new story. In this one, you're like, we failed. We got to go back in time and try again. And like then you go back. But the run is still like an FTL run where it's like you try and you win or you lose. And then you go back and you win or you lose and you go back.
Yeah. It's really fun.
You get to see the time machine?
No, the time machine is...
It's like a time vortex opens up and you get like beamed out.
Sam's asking the important question.
It's like I'm interested in what the time machines would look like.
It's like they made one of my favorite ways to put it is like they made XCOM into popcorn. Like it's really bite-sized XCOM missions in the FTL kind of structure.
PC only right now, right?
It is PC only.
Put it on Switch.
Put the game on the Switch.
So they have
those quiet weeks in the fall. We're probably going to get that on Switch.
They have said a couple things about other systems. They're bringing it to Mac and Linux for sure next. They said maybe mobile, and they said they don't have any plans for any other consoles right now because since it is a two-person team, it takes them a really long time to do anything. So if they're trying to port the game, then they're not making new features or they're not fixing bugs, right?
FTL is 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
They've been working on this the whole time? Or I guess they ported that up and updated it and stuff.
They did the advanced edition of FTL. They did the mobile port of FTL. Mm-hmm. But I think they've been working on this for at least 2 years is my vibe.
Great.
Because I know that Chris Avalon is the writer of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Avalon of... every RPG ever.
He works on every PC game now.
Yeah, and he said that he actually did most of the writing for this game before he even started, or before they were even working on Divinity 2. And Divinity 2 has been out, you know, out of early access for a number of months and out for in early access for a year before that. So
do you have his contact information?
Chris Avalon?
Yeah.
Should we hit him up? And
about the Adventure Island idea?
Oh. I'll get in touch.
We have a killer idea for Adventure Island 2.5.
It's cool. At the beginning of a match, your mechs are dropped down, and then the people in the buildings, little word bubbles, would be like, oh, the kaiju are going to get it now.
Really?
They say cute little things like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. And then matches are only like 5 minutes long.
Yeah, five turns. Mandatory. Basically every mission is a max of five turns. You have to survive four or five turns.
Justin game.
Oh.
100%.
It's great. I love turn-based strategy games, and it's cool to see the roguelike mechanics apply to that. But Justin, you've been playing a board game.
Yeah, this is Board Game Scoop. Yeah. Taking over. The logo flashes on the screen. Board Game Scoop.
Yeah.
No, I've been playing Gloomhaven. That was my birthday present to myself. It was my birthday a couple weeks ago. It's Gloomhaven. The number one board game on Board Game Geek. Number one board game of all time. It doesn't happen very often.
Of all time?
Yeah.
Like it replaced better, like Catan or something?
Yeah. I mean, it'll fade. It's because it's new. It's
better than Mousetrap.
Yeah. Better than Mousetrap?
I think it'll eventually fall off from number one. No one's ever actually played Mousetrap. When you're a kid, you get it half set up, then you get bored and go outside and play.
Have you played Fireball Island?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I don't know. I had an Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom board game. It was pretty cool.
Can you find that when you go back to
Kansas? I don't know. I'll look for it.
Gloomhaven, the box, it's 22 pounds. It's gigantic.
22?
Yeah.
Like not an exaggeration, 22?
Yeah, it's 22 pounds.
Is this what you guys have been tweeting at each other about?
No, that's Rising Sun.
Yeah, it's different. That's only 15 pounds.
Yeah. And it's
board scoop.
It's like $140. Dude, it's awesome. So at its core, so there's like a lot of board games, very complex. There's a lot of interlocking systems, but at its most basic level, you have miniatures going on a dungeon dive and fighting enemies, and then you have cards in your hand that you play to determine what your miniatures do. So I'm going to play this card and this card, and he's going to move three spaces and whack that dude with a sword. And obviously there's a lot of complexity and combos and stuff, but that's the basic element. But what really gets me and a lot of other board game fans excited is that it's a legacy game. It's a campaign game. So you make changes to your game world, like on your game mech. It came with a sticker sheet where, like, you complete a dungeon. It's like, do you want to go here, here? And first of all, you X off that dungeon on your actual game map with marker. And then when you unlock a new dungeon or unlock a new play space, you put that sticker on your board, and you can path off in one direction where someone else that plays the game will go to a completely different set of missions.
Wait, you ruin your game board?
Yeah. And you can level up.
Spend $140 on it.
When you level up your character, you can upgrade your cards, and you put stickers on the cards that something that did three attack does four attack.
You ruin
now.
Your cards too?
Yeah. It's awesome.
Ruining them. But
you're upgrading your characters?
Yeah, you upgrade your characters. And
what about the next time you want to use the map?
No, like it's a persistent game world. So you can start a new campaign with new characters, but they'll be in that game world that's been affected and changed based off what the previous characters.
So it just gets layers and layers over
it? And each character has a personal goal that's like drawn at random. It might be like, my goal is to kill 40 bears. I hate bears. I'm going to kill them. Or just stuff like that, like amass 300 gold. And when you complete that personal goal, your character is retired. You can't play with that character anymore. But each personal goal unlocks a new character class. Hmm. And so it'll be like, okay, this character is retired. And then like
you. That was crazy.
But okay, like
who are you playing with?
I do it by myself. I set it all up
for yourself.
I set it all up on the kitchen table and just like mutter to myself and just lord over this.
Don't
cardboard.
You have a cat that just hops in the middle of it?
I do it after my family goes to bed.
Even the cat?
The cat knows not to mess with the board games.
That's good.
So
the cat doesn't know that. That is not a rule I can even set.
Last thing I want to say, the coolest thing is when you go back to town or when you go on missions, you draw a city card or a road card, and it's just a random flavor event. Like you meet a man on the side of the road. What do you want to help him or, you know, rob him? Like stuff like that. And when you retire a character, you add new cards to the city deck and the road deck. And so you can draw like a character that you played as that retired can come back into the story as an NPC. Like now they're just in town, retired, and like you can have little interactions with them as your new party, as this person that you used to play as, because when you retire, it's like, you know, maybe they donate something to the church or whatever, then that adds a new random event to the deck of cards.
Plus, anytime you can pick up both cards and have them talk to each other.
Mm, yeah, that's...
You're in control.
Ask me again in a year, and then I'm just gone completely insane.
Gloomhaven.
Woo, boy.
Put it on Switch.
Can you play it with other people?
Yeah, it's meant to be. It's, you know, a solo co-op game. So you can play by yourself, or, you know, it supports up to four players.
Can you do both? Like, can you start alone and then next time you play, like, have someone join in with you?
Yeah, like, a lot of people are confused about, like, oh, you're crossing off missions and doing stuff like that. Like, you can jump in or out of the game at any time with any number of people. The only thing that is permanent is the state of the game world is affected by what you do. You unlock achievements, and then you put stickers on your board for the different achievements you've earned, and, like... Based off your choices, the city can be under military rule or like democratic rule.
Have you been cheating at all?
State. Yeah, oh yeah, I cheat.
This does sound like a board game that wishes it was a video game, yeah. Kind of weirdly.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Could be a CRPG.
The city prosperity goes up as you do things, and then that unlocks more items for you to buy from the item shop. You put more items in the item deck.
Well,
I'm with
sounds
you.
Intense.
I love that kind of stuff.
It sounds like a video game I would play. Let's check in with the listeners.
What's up?
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com, just like Blake A. Etheridge did. And he says, so I just picked up a PS1 and a Dreamcast.
Whoa.
Now I need to know what game the Omega Cops think are must plays for these systems. And yes, I have checked IGN's website and couldn't find a top 10 list for these. Let's see what you guys can come up with.
Damon found you those top 10 lists.
Virtua yeah. Tennis.
Blake, we do have top 25 lists for both the PS1 and the Dreamcast. However, admittedly, our PS1 list has not been updated since 2002. And are
legible.
Well, but it's legible.
But to be fair, no. What update would you have made in the last?
Yeah, here's the second part of it.
I'm saying maybe we would feel things need to be rearranged. The Dreamcast list, though, is illegible. Like, the formatting hasn't survived, even though it was 2009? Updated in 2009.
That's the down. Did Levi Buchanan do it?
No, I think it was like Hillary and Eric Rudvig.
Like, IGN's been
Geddes.
Online for 20 years. The oldest articles go back 20 years.
More than 20 years now, yeah.
Sometimes you go back and, you know, we've just migrated the site dozens of times. Yeah. Not dozens, but, you know, many, many times since then. And sometimes you'll go back and it's like, oh, this article is still all there. It's just words and you can read it. But sometimes they're just completely broken and we don't know why.
Yeah.
Frames. I blame it on frames.
It's probably
like,
frames.
It's like putting in a sentence in Google Translate and like translating it to Japanese and then back to English and then back to Japanese and like seeing what it says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do at least have the top 25 PS1 games from IGN in 2002.
You didn't even try to get the Dream. You can look in the back end and get the Dreamcast one.
Yeah. No, I didn't do it. Sorry.
We don't need to just get Virtua Tennis. That's fine.
This list would have been put together by Doug Perry, Dave Smith, and a few other people who were before my time.
I don't even know those people.
But number 25 is Tenchu Stealth Assassins.
There it is.
Ooh.
The original Tenchu there.
Nice.
24, Super Puzzle Fighter 2 Turbo, a game which I like very much, but I'm a little surprised.
I will say, if he's looking for real recommendations for PS1 games to get, like, Super Puzzle Fighter is on other platforms.
A lot of
so
these
you don't
are
probably
real.
Need to, like...
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. You can play that on other platforms.
One of the all-time greats.
But definitely one of the all-time greats. 22 is Lunar Silver Star Story Complete, which I'm sure Caleb Lawson would agree with.
Also been ported.
Since PS1? To what?
It's at least on iPad. Oh. But it's probably on other platforms, too.
21 is Medal of Honor, the original Medal of Honor.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Weird.
The last Medal...
Oh, boy.
The last Medal of Honor was in 2012, Medal of Honor Warfighter, I think so.
I don't think Medal of Honor is a very good game. That's the first one that I've really disagreed with.
That's a Steven Spielberg game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
20 was Crash Bandicoot Warped. 19 was Siphon Filter, and that game is awesome. Mm-hmm. That was like, it was kind of like a Metal Gear Solid ripoff at the time. But you had a taser, and you could burn people to death with it. It was great.
What else do you need?
Yeah. 18 is Final Fantasy VII. At this point, though, do you think you should just wait for the remake?
No.
Play that one? No? Because
I hear the remake might be so overwrought that, like, if you actually want a nice vintage game, and I've been asking about this recently because I've never played Final Fantasy VII, but if you want the actual good Final Fantasy VII experience, you still shouldn't play it on PlayStation 1.
Yeah, it's not.
You can play like one of the nice versions that's on PS4.
It's not a remake, or maybe it is a remake in the true sense of like it's got real time combat. Like, it's a completely different game. Like,
I guess that's true.
Completely different retelling of that same sort of rough.
Mm-hmm. Scenario. If you're playing Final Fantasy VII on PC, then make sure you install mods to get the original soundtrack and stuff like that. Because
it doesn't
have
the original soundtrack.
It's like little things are different. Like little sound effects are different. Little songs are different here and there. It's very strange. The like end fight music is like a little bit wrong. And if you played original Final Fantasy VII and then you play that, it's just like feels awful.
They George Lucas'd it.
A little bit.
17 is Grandia.
Grandia.
JRPG. I've never played that one.
Dude,
I know people like it.
I don't know that I was about to say it's my favorite JRPG of all time, but I'm like, oh yeah, Chrono Trigger and other games exist. But Grandia is really, truly excellent. And I will say it has the best battle system of any JRPG of all time.
What's the Twitter description of its battle system? Well, the Twitter descriptions are kind of long now, so maybe I need to...
So there's a timeline that runs along the bottom of the screen, and it advances forward, and when you reach the end of the timeline, it's your turn to go. But you can whack enemies and like knock them back on the timeline. So then it's like a gamble, like, oh, they're about to go and they're about to attack, but if I can interrupt them, it'll, you know, push them back on the timeline. And like manipulating the turn order of when people get to attack and interrupting their attacks is a really, really strong risk reward system that carries you through the whole game.
16 is Parappa the Rapper.
Yep.
Though that was re-released last year, I believe. 15 is Madden NFL 2000.
Oh, well, who could forget?
It's the best Madden yet.
Apparently that was a pretty good one. 14 is Silent Hill. That one's really good. I don't know what the best way to play that game is today. The original Silent Hill?
Good question.
13 is Wipeout XL. 12 is Driver. Remember Driver, where you're like an undercover cop posing as a getaway driver, I think?
Yeah. What is it, top down? In that early state?
I don't think so.
I think Driver 3 was the one that was like 3D.
I think, yeah.
Oh, so the original Driver?
PlayStation 1? Like, there's no 3D.
That's not true. Like, Gran Turismo is on PS1.
Yeah. Like, open world. Like.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, but what about GTA?
That was top down on PS1.
GTA 3?
It wasn't on PS1. It was on PS2.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. 11 was Tekken 3. And that was like that was definitely a phenomenon when it was released back in the day.
I don't know what it is about Tekken 3. Like, everyone on Earth owned it and played it. Like, I'm not a fighting game guy, and for some reason, I don't even know where it came from or how I got it, but I had a copy of Tekken 3 that I played all the time. I always played as Gon.
Those were ubiquitous.
Same. Yeah. That was like the second wave of like...
Yeah, that's like when I got
super
my
popular fighting games, really. 10 is Ridge Racer Type 4. You don't think that was a 3D racing game?
No, it was. It's just they're on tracks.
Driver's Open World tracks. Is what Sam's getting at.
I get you. 9 is Street Fighter Alpha 3. 8 is Ape Escape. And Ape Escape is really fun.
Escape.
That's what introduced the DualShock controller.
That's another one that would be good to bring back. Yep. Like modern remake.
Bring back Ape Escape.
Mm-hmm. What do you do in Ape Escape?
Catch apes.
They've escaped.
But you need to use fun gadgets.
Yeah.
Okay.
That show off the dual analog sticks of the DualShock controller.
No, it's 3D. It's 3D, like almost Mario-esque. There's apes getting up to hijinks in the 3D levels, and then you run around and you go quack and catch them with nets and shit. And then later on, you get gadgets to like.
Where do the apes live?
Well, it's they've escaped to different areas and different time periods.
Are they from a laboratory
periods.
Or a zoo?
Yeah, they've
or?
Escaped a laboratory.
Laboratory.
That made them kind of
smart.
Put
them back in the laboratory.
Yeah, maybe they've all got like little
They made them smart?
On.
Yeah.
They are wearing
There's
siren
no
hats.
Way you should be catching those escape apes.
Let them be free.
Number 7 is Final Fantasy 8. It's a little, I probably wouldn't put that above Final Fantasy 7 myself. No, number 6 is Vagrant Story, which I think I didn't play the original, but there was a Vagrant Story on DS.
Is that true? Vagrant Story is a cult classic. It's one I never got around to, but you know, people that play it insist, you know, that it deserves to be placed at the top of anyone's top list. Zach Ryan loves that game.
Yeah. Number 5 is Resident Evil 2, which they are remaking. Capcom is remaking that one just like they did with Resident Evil 1. Number 4 is Tony Hawk 1.
Interesting.
Yeah, you'd put 2.
Yeah, 2 or 3.
But they were already nostalgic for 1 then. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
That's why 1 over 2 or 3? Let's get them on the phone.
3 I played on the next generation.
Maybe 1 is better than 2.
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
I think 2 is the one you remember. Like, I think if you go back and...
played 1.
I think if you go back and play Tony Hawk 1, you'll be like, oh, this was okay. And then you go play Tony Hawk 2 and you're like, oh, this is the game I'm remembering.
I don't remember if it's 2 or 3 that introduced, you know, the manual and just some of the abilities that just let combos go on forever and really highly skilled players really separate themselves.
Well, then in a twist, 2 must be the next one on the list.
Nope. the next one is Gran Turismo 2. Above the original Gran Turismo. Then number 2 is Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Nice.
Which,
I can guess what number 1 is.
In all.
Another Konami breaks. Game.
In all seriousness, something you definitely should play. And then number 1 is, of course, Metal Gear Solid.
But I would recommend, if you just got this system, that you should play Castlevania before any of those other games, including Metal Gear.
I probably would too.
Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
I don't think Metal Gear is easy to get into.
It's my second favorite game of all time.
After Metroid.
Yep.
It's a Metroidvania.
It is.
It's the Metroidvania. Yep.
But I was able to hop in and play Symphony of the Night after never experiencing it in the PlayStation 1 era just fine. But when I tried to play Metal Gear, I was like, this game's really hard to play and weird.
Yeah. And also, Symphony of the Night is very fairly remembered for its atmosphere and soundtrack and for making Metroidvania a thing. But that game was like really RPG-like. Like you could equip different weapons and armor that like changed your character build in really meaningful ways. And I think that's like an overlooked portion of what made that game part of a classic. Like one person might play that game, sword and board, and another character might play it really differently. And
with the jewel knuckles?
Yeah, like their Alucard would feel really different.
And there's guns, right? Maybe not in Symphony.
There's
actually
a lot of weapons.
There's an Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah. I always played with a shield that did damage whenever it touched enemies. And then you had to get right up next to them and like rub them with the shield.
Mm.
I would recommend two more games that are not available on any other platform. They haven't been re-released or remastered or anything. That would be Einhander.
Mm.
That was just a Squaresoft 2D shooter when Squaresoft was like experimenting with other genres outside of JRPGs. And it's excellent. It's very, very cool. And then also, of course, Rival Schools.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Umjammer Lammy.
Umjammer Lammy is the sequel to Parappa the Rapper.
Fact. There's an actual sequel to Parappa.
If you
If
you want a game that kind of doesn't have, you can't get the experience of anywhere else but the PlayStation 1, there's the Monster Rancher game.
Yep.
You guys remember that?
Because
Monster Rancher. Funny story, Tom.
Yeah.
That was one of our 20 questions that nobody would have ever gotten.
Oh, really?
Controversy.
You guys got to bring that earlier. Yeah, yeah, seriously. Yeah. The Monster Rancher game is that game's great. I mean, that was one of the games. Yeah. For full disclosure, at the time this list was made in 2001, I was 10. Mm-hmm. So like my memory is selective in the games, but I very distinctly remember freaking out because if I put the soundtrack to The Little Mermaid in as a disc in this PS1, you would get a very specific monster that was like aquatic themed that you could only get from that disc. For those who don't know, I'm going to sound like a crazy person talking about this.
That's fine.
Monster Rancher, you would literally, like, the thing about Monster Rancher in the anime is that they would unlock these monsters from stone discs. And so the game, you would open up the system, take out the game disc while it was running, which also blew my mind as a kid, put in literally any other CD.
And if you needed
CD
to stop the spinning disc, you just put your finger on it.
That was the best feeling.
Yeah.
And it leaves a nice line where you left off, so you know where you left off.
And then you could put in literally any other CD, and it would read that disc somehow, give you a monster based on something in the CD, and there were specific CDs that were Easter eggs that would give you specific things, and it was because like Sony was the publisher of that soundtrack. And
some holiday CDs would give you like Christmas themed monsters.
Wait, do you think that one wasn't a coincidence?
No, that one was not a coincidence. That one was like,
and it was for the soundtrack.
Yeah, it was like Sony. This is what I remember.
The Little Mermaid.
If Sony published the soundtrack of The Little Mermaid is what I remember, and so they specifically pulled out that thing as a thing.
Here's
and
what
like,
I hope.
Everything's
I hope
better
that,
down where
I hope
better.
That everything Tom has said on GameSkip this week is a lie. Yeah. There's no Goof Troop game on SNES. That whole Monster Hunter anecdote's not true.
We'll never know.
Your mileage on Monster Hunter may vary depending on how many CDs you have lying around your house.
I wonder if Blu-ray would work in that. Yeah. Who knows?
Do you want that series to come back?
Eh.
What are some quick Dreamcast recommendations we would make?
Virtua Tennis.
Skies of Arcadia.
I was going to ask if you'd recommend Skies of Arcadia.
Yeah, I mean, Legend on the GameCube.
The GameCube version's better, but still good game.
Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is on Dreamcast, and man, the sprite work is so excellent.
I watched Zach Ryan play Sonic Adventure for about an hour, and it's the funniest, stupidest game.
Yeah?
Yeah, it doesn't hold up. And I like Sonic games. I'm not one of the people that don't like Sonic games.
Not one of those.
That one is really bad.
Jet Set?
Jet Set, which one? Radio?
Jet Set Radio, and then Jet Set Radio Future was Jet Grind. Was Jet Grind Radio the original? I can't remember which the original
I get
was.
The mix up too.
Jet Grind was the original.
Wait, people
and then Jet Set was.
Flip their wigs for Crazy Taxi.
Oh, yeah. Crazy Taxi is a great call too.
Yeah, but I keep going back to, like, I played Crazy Taxi on the GameCube and I played Jet Set on the Xbox. So it's like the Dreamcast is a little bit of a console out of time in that way.
Mm. Yeah. They also have Project Justice, which is the sequel to Rival Schools.
What about Power Stone?
There's Power Stone 1 and 2. Yeah.
People love those games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are like a different type of, like a brawling multiplayer game.
Blue Stinger is one of the first video games I can remember seeing where I'm like, games will never look better than this.
Blue Stinger.
We did it. And if you look at it now, it's horrible. But
yeah. The Dreamcast is home to many.
What about Shenmue?
Well, they're remaking that one too. I don't know.
Well, they're making Shenmue 3. Are they remaking one?
Well, I think they announced remasters of 1 and 2, and then the Dreamcast, like the Sega Saturn before it, is home to many great arcade shooter conversions like Ikaruga, Mars Matrix, Twinkle Star Sprites, Gunbird 2, and Gigawing 1 and 2. And that's just
Gigawing.
A sample. Just a sample of a really great
And I hear games. Typing the dead is really fun.
If you have a
keyboard. If you have a keyboard ready to go, yeah.
Which I do. And I've still never played Dreamcast.
Never played any Dreamcast game?
Mm-mm, but sure. I have one and a keyboard. I just don't have any games.
The Dreamcast. Just get Project Justice. We'll play.
I think that was the last console I can remember. We've talked before on the show of that wonderful feeling of waiting, you know, several years to get a console, and you get it really cheap, and you get a bunch of games, and just on the cheap, you have like 10 new things to play through, and that was my Dreamcast experience. Got it right at the end, like the console's like $50, you know.
And
just,
that's why the Dreamcast died.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Now every other console I buy at or near launch.
All right, moving on. This is Dwayne Welty in Columbia, Missouri. Represent. He says, I've been visiting IGN for over 20 years.
Well, not over.
You must have remembered our list of top 25 PS1 games. He says, your show is my rock. It's been there for me through career changes, marriage, buying a house, having twins, all of life's little adventures. So first and foremost, thank you. Dwayne Welty.
We're doing nothing up here.
Second, I have a question that's been nagging me for quite some time. I've heard over and over that video game companies don't do pixel art anymore because it's just too expensive. Mm. Instead, they opt for an artistic 3D style or gulp 2.5D if they don't feel like selling any copies. But how does this jive with the thriving indie scene where developers produce fantastic pixel art games on small budgets with even smaller teams? Mm-hmm. There's obviously a market out there for this style. I know I'm not the only 30-something that can't get enough. Shovel Knight and Axiom Verge are my favorite games of the past 10 years. I will choose pixels over polygons every time.
Same.
So, but I don't think expense has anything to do with the reason why Activision and EA aren't making pixel games.
I mean, but I definitely think they just don't employ 2D artists anymore. Like, that expertise is not in the building.
Well, yeah, but I also think just the general video game audience is expecting something a little more realistic. In Call of Duty and in Destiny 2, well, you think they get away with doing pixel art?
I think he's talking about like Mega Man, you know?
So like Mega Man 11 is not using pixel art.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is that there are new art styles being used, like in Limbo and stuff like that, which are, you know, as artistically interesting as something that would now be like retro looking in pixels. Like, you have to choose your style.
Yeah.
And they're not just choosing realism, which is good. We get all kinds of aesthetics right now. We get Cuphead is an aesthetic that I think is much more cool and interesting than pixel art now. I think that's, like, I vastly preferred that if I, you know, had to say, like, what's the coolest looking game that came out last year to something like, you know, Owlboy.
Well, but there's also no shortage
looks amazing.
Of great pixel art available right now with Owlboy and Celeste and Into the Breach. I mean, like, the list just goes on and on, right? So
but only
we're not
from indies.
Hurting from that. But, yeah, it is and by and large from indies.
Well, I just think it's interesting to hear this, because I agree that, like, I would always want a pixel art game over something that's sort of blocky and looks kind of half-baked in terms of its 3D.
What's an example?
What was
like
the
Nintendo 64 games?
Well,
Mighty No. 9?
Yeah, that's the exact example I was going to give. Mighty No. 9 is a game where I think they went 3D and then couldn't quite pull it off, and it just ended up looking... Games that look like that get dated much quicker than a pixel art game. A pixel art game will look good. Celeste is going to look good. It's not going to get dated 10 years from
now.
That's true. But the interesting thing is, one of the things that came up in both our Iconoclast review and our Celeste review was there were a lot of commenters who said pretty much the opposite, who were like, you know, pixel art, this is a pixel art game. Pixel art is lazy. Pixel art is cheap. No game that has pixel art should be considered for getting a 10, you know, all that stuff. So it's interesting to hear somebody say, I love pixel art. I would rather more things be pixel art, when there's actually a lot of people who say the opposite too. So I think it is really a preference thing too, and there might just be companies that don't want to do that. You know, like you said, Ubisoft is not a company that's known for pixel art games, so maybe they just don't want to mess with that.
It's interesting to see sort of the arc that this has taken, where pixel art was gone, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. Like it was completely absent, and then, you know, indies brought it back. But now it's sort of like run its course again. Like, people look at the style of a game like Celeste, and, you know, it's a little bit more, it's not enough anymore, right? Like, that game's very pretty, and I like its pixel art style, but it does feel not nearly as special as it would have even 4 or 5 years ago. Like, there's a glut of, you know, samey-looking pixel art, you know, 16-bit-ish.
That is really popular.
You know, 2D indie game.
It's getting very hard to differentiate yourself,
There was a console lack of those games, but the DS was technically all pixel art. It had Yoshi Touch and Go. It looked exactly like Super Nintendo. And the GBA was also. And so there's always been people making sprite-based games. All the Kirby games.
That's what WayForward does, right?
Yeah, WayForward, all of their games. It's just like consoles that it got rarer and rarer, and now it's back in force for sure. I think that what's would be really interesting is to see people not just use square pixels to make games, but try to use them in the ways that were actually limited by the systems that they were on. Because now you get games like Shovel Knight or Owlboy, which are like absolutely beautiful, gorgeous games. But like, there's no way you could put that on a Super Nintendo because you can't put that many colors on screen.
That's really fascinating. I love reading discussions about that and reading about like Gamasutra or GDC talks about that, where we call these games 16-bit, you know, knowing full well that's a shorthand for like an art style in an era, right? Knowing that on an actual 16-bit console, like there's way, like the pixel density is way too high, or they're displaying way too many colors for that to have actually been pulled. A character is on screen, you know, so it is kind of like a have your cake or eat it too way. And, you know, someone like me that grew up on those games can re-experience them, but without those limitations. But in some ways, it's not like, to your point, like maybe it is a little bit unpure to like what was actually truly.
Well, it's an aesthetic now. It's just it's a way to display stuff that's just like cel shading or just like black and white. It's just something you choose to make your games with.
Actually, really like I think maybe the next wave. I mean, what do I know? But I wouldn't be surprised if the next wave was more like mixed medium, where, you know, pixel art mixed with other, like I always go
like
back
Paper to Paper Mario.
Like Paper Mario, or it's a weird example, but Zelda Four Swords was, you know, a top-down 16-bit looking Zelda game. But when you would kill an enemy, they would disappear in a puff of like modern looking like purple smoke. Like it looked like the smoke from like Wind Waker, and like seeing more contemporary and juxtaposition of like the
And of course Mario Odyssey did all that.
Mario Odyssey is a really much better example of that than I just gave. But we're going to see more playful mixtures of old and new.
There's a couple indie examples of that too. Duelist, which is now actually it's a card game that made by Counterplay Games that also now has got picked up and is being published by I think it's Bandai. Bandai Namco. Maybe I'm wrong about that, and I apologize if I am. Anyway, that has pixel art sprites. All the characters are pixel art, but it's these kind of beautifully hand-painted backgrounds. The other one is Full Metal Furies, which is the new game from the Rogue Legacy developers. All the sprites.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Man, I love Rogue Legacy.
Yeah, Rogue Legacy is great. Full Metal Furies is a real fun game, too. It's kind of a brawler, Castle Crasher style game. All the sprites, all the interactable things in that game are pixel art, and it's on hand-drawn backgrounds. So I think you're right that that's starting to come into fashion more as people start to figure out how to do it well. Because it is a thing where if you do it badly, it can look really bad.
Sam's exactly right. I don't know how I overlooked Mario Odyssey. Like, that's a perfect example of a big AAA game getting playful with, you know, trading on its roots while also presenting something new and fresh.
All right, and that brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Matthias Mondo, and it is not Goof Troop.
Not Goof Troop.
That's a freebie.
Not Goof Troop.
Is it Goof Troop?
No, wait, no.
And that's been...
Yeah. Okay, does your character speak? He was prepared for the hat thing.
Yeah. Your character, I don't...
Does Goofy speak? He does, but
Ludo does. I'll give you that one free because I don't know if your character speaks.
All right, so we're back to square zero.
Mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm.
You can keep asking until you get one that you can answer.
That's fine. We can move on.
Was this game? Is this from before 1990?
No.
I need to ask a context question real quick to you guys. Does he only do older games generally? Or?
No,
it's a mix.
He does it all over the place.
Then I'll go, is this game from either this or the last generation?
So
past two generations.
Past two
generations. So that's PS4 and 3.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Okay. So now I'm all kinds of messed up. So it's not from the 80s or 70s, but it's also not from like the 2010s, give or take.
PS3 is 2007.
So was this game released in the 90s?
Yes.
Okay.
Was this on a Nintendo platform?
Yes.
Cool.
skipping you, Tom. Was this game on
90s? That's 90s is just N64 and SNES.
Yeah. Was this game on a 64-bit?
That's NES, Game Boy.
Oh, okay. Virtual Boy. Okay, yeah.
Was this game on a 64-bit console?
That would be the N64.
No.
All right.
Oh, I see what was tripping you up there.
What is it?
Like maybe the PS1 or something was 32-bit. And
yeah.
I was trying to be cutesy, but then I got too clever with it. So it's probably, it could be handheld, but that means it's most likely SNES.
Guys, mm-hmm. I think it's Goof Troop.
See, we are.
Could be. He didn't know if the character talked.
Yeah.
Is this made in Japan?
Yes.
Mm. Is it a first-party Nintendo game?
Is it a first-party Nintendo game? No.
Okay. Is this a SNES game? Did this game release on the SNES?
Was this game on the SNES? No.
Ah, so it's not N64 or SNES.
Yeah.
And it was made in Japan. So it's what, Game Boy?
But we know
it's on that. Yeah. Was this a handheld game?
No.
So it's late NES. He did it to us again.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Was this a late NES game?
No.
Whoa!
That's 10.
Ah!
So
I thought it was a Nintendo.
Wait.
You asked
but it was released
if it's on a Nintendo system. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so we we don't know if it's Nintendo. Okay.
But wait. But it's not 64. It's not.
Damon's a jerk. It was NES. On like the Wii U Virtual Console or something.
Right. Okay.
No.
Wait. No. Why would that be?
Because we eliminated all the 90s Nintendo consoles.
No, we must not have.
We did, okay, so we did NES, SNES, Game Boy, and all handhelds, and we did N64, and the GameCube didn't come out till the 2000s.
So there's still Virtual Boy.
Unless, is he getting us on a technicality? Was the 64 not technically 64-bit or something like that?
It was.
Okay.
I mean, I appreciate your line of thinking, but...
Game Boy,
sometimes
so it's not a handheld.
Could have been Virtual Boy.
Sometimes games are released for more than one system.
Here we go.
In different years.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So it's probably came out on something else in the same way that Final Fantasy VII
or
came out on
PC. Is this a 16-bit game?
No. Wait. I think it was probably a late N64 game again. That's what hosed you the episode I wasn't on.
No, but you said it was on a 64-bit system.
You're right.
Is this a 16-bit game?
No.
No, but we already know it's not on the SNES.
That doesn't matter. It could have come to the Virtual Console on the Wii, and it could be on the Genesis or TurboGrafx-16. So we just eliminated TurboGrafx and Genesis.
Okay. I don't.
Does that mean it could still be PlayStation?
I don't know.
I don't think any PlayStation.
I don't
games
know. We've asked 11 questions. I know absolutely nothing about this game, except it was made in Japan, not by Nintendo.
I mean, it could be Final Fantasy something. Was this on PlayStation?
No.
Why do you keep asking these questions?
Because we need to know what console it's on. How are we going to get the game if we don't know what console it's on? It's from the 90s.
Okay.
Seriously, like I don't know how they would go about this.
Yeah,
I'm blanking on what else could be in the 90s.
It could be on Dreamcast.
Mm.
It could be on 32X or Saturn or.
We know it was made in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It could be helpful to know if it was like Konami or Capcom.
Could be arcade
or arcade. It's like back in that era, it's like all Konami and Capcom, right? Sega, maybe. Mm.
Yeah, it could be. I guess
I would still go for systems. If you guys don't want to go for systems, that's fine. I don't know how we're going to get it out of
this. Was this game made by Capcom?
No.
So it could have been an arcade game in the 90s that then came to a Nintendo console later, right? Like that's what we've determined?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'm just going to ask that. Was this an arcade game?
Yes.
Okay.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Turtles in Time.
Yeah, or the Simpsons arcade game. Was this a licensed game?
No.
So Crazy Taxi?
Yeah.
Crazy Taxi did. Well, did Crazy Taxi come to
Nintendo? Yeah.
Crazy Taxi, Soul Calibur, Tekken.
Yeah.
Just ask if it's a fighting game?
Yeah.
Is it a fighting game?
No.
Okay.
So you got racing,
Is it a game where you're fighting the traffic? That's not an actual question.
Is it a driving game?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Arcade driving game.
Three questions left.
That came out later on a...
Cruising USA?
Nintendo system.
No, but it's not N64.
Yeah.
San Francisco Rush? Or one of the Rush games?
It sounds like Crazy Taxi.
But that was made in America. Crazy Taxi was made in Japan. It does sound like Crazy Taxi.
Mm-hmm.
Was this made by Sega?
Yes.
Okay.
we get this. Yeah. We don't deserve it.
Yeah, it's true.
Does this game have licensed music in it?
Yes.
Okay. Is it Crazy Taxi?
Yes.
Oh, hey!
It is Crazy Taxi. Oh. Hit arcades in 1999.
And we mentioned it earlier.
Yep.
Yeah. We would have never got there if it wasn't already a goof on the show.
Hit arcades in 99, Dreamcast in 2000, and then came to GameCube and PS2. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, after that.
I think doing that whole roundabout system thing really helped because you had to know it was an arcade that came out on a Nintendo system later.
Yeah.
That's super specific.
Yeah, we did it.
To Soul Calibur and Crazy Taxi. It could have only been those two.
That's all planned. That was a plan from the beginning.
I'm glad you guys got there. It was going to be terrible if you didn't get there when we talked about Crazy Taxi on the show.
Yeah, but it helped that we eliminated Goof Troop.
Yeah. I mean, once Goof Troop's out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I was so worried when it's like two questions and we're like 95% sure it's Crazy Taxi that you were going to be like, nope. It's. I was trying to think like what other racing games was Sega making? Like some sort of Sega Off-Road.
It's Taxi of the Dead.
What's it called? Outrun,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's probably an Outrun 2000.
No, Namco does the Hang-On. Is that what it's called?
Super Hang-On, yeah.
That's Sega.
That is Sega. Oh, boy. Could have been Super Hang-On.
What was the, Space Harrier?
Also Sega.
Those are all 80s games.
We're just checking that out.
So it's good we did the 90 thing.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't know if we could get those.
You guys got there. Well played.
What's Ridge Racer? That's what I was thinking of.
That's Namco.
Okay. Yeah. And was that on Dreamcast?
No, that started on PlayStation 1.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Well, thank you for the suggestion, Matias Mondo.
That's a good one.
If you guys have other suggestions, make sure to email them to me at gamescoop@ign.com. That is all of the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Tom. Everybody, play some real fun games this weekend. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out. We'll be right back.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.